From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. News yesterday that one in four Americans with 401k retirement savings are now using those savings to get by. And that's not the only desperate measure out there. When times are tough and it's lose your lights, your heat, your home, or pull out the credit card, many of the most vulnerable are turning to plastic, to debt. And of course, it's a trap this hour on Point. Tough times and Americans in debt. You can join the conversation. Have you worked your way out of debt or into it in these tough years? Have you been trapped using debt to try to keep up, stay afloat? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. I want to look first today at the news out this week that lots of Americans have been tapping their 401k savings long before retirement. One in four, we read. Matt Fellows is with us. He's head of the financial advisory firm Hello Wallet, which yesterday released a widely reported study showing one in four American workers dipping into retirement savings accounts to pay current expenses. Matt Fellows, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be with you.
What's going on?
A lot of money is leaving the 401k every year to pay for non-retirement needs. It's just a stunning amount of money. We found overall about $70 billion now is being withdrawn by workers every year to pay for non-retirement needs, emergencies that come up, bills that have to be paid, and so on. And to put that in perspective, employers are putting in every year about $120 billion in match contributions. So employees are pulling out about 60% of what employers are putting in for retirement security every year.
One in four now doing this. How deeply are they wiping out those savings, or are you saying they're just tapping them in some way? Are they emptying the piggy bank, borrowing it against it? What?
About 60% are wiping out their entire 401k balance. The remainder are taking out a short-term loan, or they're withdrawing temporarily their funds from their 401k. And then of those that are actually loaned against, I think right now about 15 or 20% are defaulted. So for the vast majority of people that are doing this, they're losing that money for good for retirement purposes.
Now, this is pretty crummy, however you do it. But there are penalties here. I mean, first of all, it's not there or may not be there when you retire. But when you take it out, are there not penalties and interest to be paid? How's it work?
That's right. Well, there's three options that workers have for taking out their money from the retirement program. One is that they can cash out their balance when they leave their job, and that's assessed a 10% tax penalty. A second is that people can take loans against their own 401k, and in that case, they pay an interest rate, but they are not assessed a tax penalty. And then third case is a withdrawal for some kind of emergency, and they're charged a 10% tax penalty. But here's I think, the even bigger issue, that regardless of whether it's a loan or a cash out or withdrawal, these are people that are using this money for non-retirement purposes, and what's they're suffering as a consequence is they're having to pay administrative fees, they're paying investment fees, trading fees, mutual fund fees, and so on, when that money really would be better off just sitting in a savings account.
They would have been better off never to put it in there in the first place. But on the other hand, Matt, I mean, we hear all these loud alarms about how Americans are not saving enough for retirement. They need to be saving for retirement.
That's right. I mean, workers are collectively about $6 trillion behind on retirement savings today. I think only about 55% or so are adequately prepared for retirement. So that is certainly a major problem. Unfortunately, it's not the only problem that workers face.
Did your survey look at why people are pulling this money out? Are they doing it to buy new boats or really for essentials? Do you have any idea?
Yes, we did. We found that 75% of people that are taking out this money are doing so to address short-term financial needs. They could have an emergency that popped up, like they have a problem with their car that they need to get fixed. They need to get their radiator fixed. They could have an unexpected health expense that came up. They're trying to save their home because they're in foreclosure. Only about 7% are taking out this money because they've been laid off and they don't have have any money. The vast majority are taking this money out to pay for unexpected expenses. There's also a decent chunk that are using this money to buy homes. So they're shifting the money from the 401k over to a home asset.
Has it always been like this, Matt? If you look back 10 years, 15 years, were Americans dipping into these 401k savings at the same rate?
No, it's been growing steadily. It certainly increased during the Great Recession over the last few years, but this trend started well over a decade ago. We found in our work that about $30 billion was being withdrawn back in 2004, and today we're estimating it's about $70 billion. So it's been steadily growing in value and number over time.
If only 7%, I think you said, is about unemployment or layoffs, then why do you think it's growing? What's pushing it up? If it's not people who have lost their jobs where you might understand you have no option, why?
Here's the central challenge and the central cause of this, that only about 15% of Americans in this country budget their money every month. And so most people in this country have no idea if they're spending more than they make. Over time, that makes families increasingly more financially insecure because of the fact that their debts accumulate, their savings don't accumulate. And so when they run into an unexpected expense, their 401k is often the last resort that they have to turn to address some unexpected expenses.
So you're wrapping them on the wrist for not being good budgeters. What about flat wages, my friend?
Flat wages are important, but if wages are not being used effectively to advance someone's self-interest, then it's kind of all for naught. So I'm definitely not wrapping anyone on the wrist, because it is most of America. It's 85% of the households. There's no education that we receive in schools to do this. It's just what's happened is we evolved away from keeping check ledgers where people mark down, right, before 1993, 1994. Yeah. Every single week, that they write a check or have an expense.
You can see your balance falling through the month or the week, yeah.
Exactly. People were very aware. But when we shifted over to electronic payments in the 90s, all of that budgeting just disappeared. And so it's kind of a natural evolution of the payments market in this country. We just haven't sat up and paid attention to the consequences. And this is one big consequence of that.
I still can't help wondering, from your report, if it's not, though, really as much about people just not having enough, perhaps. I mean, you found, 30% of households earning less than $50,000 had cashed out a retirement plan. Only 12% of those earning over $100,000. Only 8% of those earning over $150,000. I mean, when people have the money, they look much less likely to fall into this.
Yeah, there's no question about that, that this is strongly related to income. Although, an even bigger predictor of whether someone's going to take out their money is whether they have sufficient emergency savings, what we call 3 months or more of their annual income saved. If you don't have emergency savings, you have two times the likelihood that you're going to breach your retirement savings.
Though I suppose there, too, a little harder to put together emergency savings if you're making substantially less income.
It sure is, because your margin for error is a lot smaller, and you've just got less money ultimately to pay for your bills.
You know, Matt, we're thinking about debt overall this hour, who gets into it and why these days, and I wonder how you're thinking about this. I mean, I'm looking at a headline here from October, says, a rise in household debt might be a sign of a strengthening recovery. That is suggesting Americans are willing to go out and borrow to do things again, so maybe we're back on our feet. How do you look at our level of household debt and what it says about our economic health?
Well, you know, we've just gone through the Great Recession, and it was actually the Depression in the 30s that started the spend economy here in America, and that really, spending is the essence of the U.S. economy today, and that was a very deliberate decision by Roosevelt and his brain trust and others to help encourage, through monetary policy and financial innovation and so on, the economy to become more dependent on consumer spending money. So I'm not surprised to see that characterized as a good sign. But for households at a whole, it's not a good sign, because they're already spending more than they're making. And as a result of that, they're putting themselves into increasing amounts of financial insecurity.
Do you have a sense of whether people are going into the 401k as an alternative to credit card debt, or because they're maxed out on credit card debt?
Well, I think most people don't think about participating in a 401k because they're automatically enrolled often now in a 401k when they sign up for a new job. And so there's actually not a lot of thought that's invested in participating in the 401k today. And what we're asking for in this paper is for employers to help employees make a more deliberate decision at the time of employment about whether this is, in fact, a good financial decision for them or not.
What's coming down the road for Americans when they reach retirement if they're pulling this money out? And I think you said people in their 40s are pulling the most out, but also people well into their 50s, if they're pulling it out, what's waiting for them when retirement age comes?
Well, I'm sorry to be the bearer of all these statistics that are unpleasant to hear about.
Yeah, you're a bummer.
No. Well, the good news, though, is that employers are taking very seriously these data and are addressing the fact that employees do need these basic financial needs addressed. But that said, to answer your question, the average American near retirement, so over 55 to 65, has four times the amount of debt that they have in 401k savings. So they have four times more debt than they have in 401k savings. It's just a remarkable statistic. So what you're seeing is that households are retiring with more debt and less income, and it just means they're going to have to adjust their lifestyles.
Matt Fellows with Hello Wallet, CEO there. Matt, thanks very much for joining us today.
Nice to be with you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about tough times and Americans in debt, the trap that's been grabbing people on the edge, that great sucking sound of household debt when it's borrow or lose the house, maybe. What do you do? Joining me now from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Kristen Seefeld. She is a sociologist, professor of social work at the University of Michigan. Since 2006, she's been following a group of 39 single mothers living in or near Detroit and studying the debt they carry and its consequences. Kristen Seefeld, welcome to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us from Atlanta, Georgia, is Michelle Jones, Senior Vice President of Counseling at the nonprofit financial counseling service Credibility. She works with a staff of more than 150 counselors specializing in budget, credit, housing, and pre-bankruptcy. Michelle Jones, thank you for being here.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
Okay. What's happening? Kristen, you're looking very closely here. We've been reading lately about, you know, we see the headlines about Americans getting out of debt. But a lot of people are paying attention to who's getting into debt. Can we look at those big headlines first that, you know, that say Americans chipping away at their debt since the recession came on? They've been, you know, little by little, the numbers have been coming down. Pick that apart for us, Chris. Is that true? Or I'm reading other stories that say, well, okay, but that includes people who have walked away from their debt, people who have been foreclosed on, mortgages gone bad, credit card debt abandoned. What's the bottom line?
Well, so I think for some Americans, that's very likely true. The folks that my research is focused on are at the lower end of the economic spectrum. They work in lower paying jobs. They don't have 401k plans. And, you know, their debt, even while over the last number of years it may have stabilized, really has not chipped away, at least from what I've observed.
I'm looking here, Michelle, I don't know if you follow these numbers, but these numbers that said, you know, we saw this all through last year, consumers paying down debt. But when you look more closely, it looks like they're walking away from more than they're paying down. Have we got our act together in the recession, Michelle, or are we in deeper trouble?
Well, some of that deleveraging that you've seen, it has come a couple of different ways. On the one hand, households are taking better care of their bottom line budget. They are working very hard to live within their means and to reduce the amount of debt they're carrying. However, on the other hand, you're absolutely right. A lot of the reductions that we've seen have come because people have lost their property to foreclosure, and that has effectively been wiped from their balance sheet, or they have filed for bankruptcy to get out from under unsurmountable levels of debt.
So what are you seeing, Michelle? Who's getting into the debt trap these days, and what's pushing them there? The old sort of, 90s and early 2000s image was Americans just profligate, just, you know, pulling out the credit card, living like there's no tomorrow, borrowing every which way, and, you know, of course they get in trouble. Is that who's getting in trouble?
No, I would say it's a very different picture that we see today. Over the past several years, the percent of people who come to us for help who cite unemployment or an even greater number who cite a reduction in income. That's varied somewhere between 50 and 70% of the people that we've served over the past few years. So this employment uncertainty has really been underpinning most of this. And so when you have that uncertainty in your income, you make decisions based on what resources you have available to you. And so for some people, this means taking on debt or maybe shuffling balances between credit cards or even turning to higher risk loan options because you simply need the cash to cover your day-to-day living expenses. And so that's been an increase in what we've seen. People using debt in ways that maybe from the outside looking in, you may think that's not a very wise move. Well, it may be a high-cost move. It may have long-term consequences, but that's what you have to do today to get through your income shortfall.
Kristen, what are you seeing in the people you follow? What pushes them into debt? What's the kind of sequence of realities that they look at?
I think what Michelle says is absolutely what I've seen. Job loss, definitely something that pushes people into debt. One of the sort of problems I've witnessed is difficulty, you know, sort of accessing the social safety net when job loss occurs. So we've got a different kind of safety net in place now. It's more difficult to access cash welfare benefits. And a lot of the women I talk to have had a lot of trouble trying to get unemployment insurance when they're laid off, having their employers contest their filings. Just general instability, though. A lot of the jobs folks work, your hours may vary from one week to the next. You know, you may be signed on as a full-time employee, but one week you work 30 hours, the next week you maybe work 15. And it's really difficult to plan your and budget out your money when you don't actually know what's going to come in at the end of the month.
So what about this notion that it's bad budgeters? We heard earlier in the hour that people just aren't keeping budgets anymore, so they don't know what their balance is, and so they get in trouble.
I have to say that, at least for the folks that I work with, I think they're some of the most financially savvy people I've ever met. They just don't have the resources. You know, at the end of the month, you know, what's coming in does not cover just the basics. And, you know, we're not talking about, you know, frivolous spending. We're talking about, the monthly electricity bill, the rent, a car payment, that's needed to keep a job. So nothing extravagant, just really the bare-bone basics.
Michelle, there in Atlanta, I mean, we see stories of people who run up against some problem. Let's say they lose their job, and then they've got to make choices. Do I pay these bills? Do I not pay them? Or do I, once I'm out of money, do I borrow to pay them? I think a lot of people have had, and maybe have learned otherwise in this recession, have had the expectation, well, okay, I'll borrow because I'll get another job pretty soon, and then I'll pay it back. Are people getting in this trouble because that next job just doesn't show up?
Sure. We have seen some of that. And so, you know, when somebody loses a job and they are looking to prioritize their bills, one of the things that we've seen people do is actually they are prioritizing their credit card payments ahead of their mortgage payments, precisely because they believe when I get my job, my next job in 3 months or 6 months or even 9 months, I'm going to be able to resolve that mortgage difficulty then. But today, I need my credit cards to remain active because that's what I'm using to buy groceries, to pay for prescription medications, to put gas in my car so I can get back and forth to work if one member of the household is still working. So that is the prioritization that we've seen people make. You know, the other thing that we see is that people tend to pay bills if there's a personal relationship involved. So there's been some talk about, you know, using payday loans or finance companies or title pawn or that type of thing. That's often a lending of a last resort. And so when you see people going down that path, when we look at them objectively, we may put those debts at a lower repayment priority than we would a mortgage payment or a rent payment. But that person who's taking out that loan has that personal relationship with that payday lender who made them that loan. They see them in person across the counter when they got that cash. And so they feel compelled in some ways to go back and repay that individual who helped them rather than maybe a larger creditor where there's not that personal relationship and they aren't there in the community with them.
Of course, it doesn't always work that way. Lots of people writing into us with stories and observations about this. Angie says, you know, when times get tough, It can be rough. I mean, she says it's simple. You pay all you can. Never answer a number you don't know. I guess that means a potential debt collector. Cut cable. Cut internet. Don't go out. Shop secondhand shops and sales only. Buy the cheapest groceries you can and keep digging. She writes, I was garnished 25% of my wages after taxes for an ex's bills after I'd paid off two bank accounts he overdrew. Collectors don't work with you, so don't expect it. I mean, once you get into this trap, it can be pretty tough. Let's hear from our listeners. Joyce in Providence, Rhode Island. Joyce, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say that I really love your program. I hear it a lot when I'm driving around in the car, and I think you're amazing. I don't know how you know all these things.
I just keep at it. Thank you. What's your story?
My story is that I'm kind of proud that I disciplined myself and paid down $55,000 worth of mostly credit cards my husband had racked up when I wasn't watching, and my own. And
55 grand, and you paid it down. Kudos to you. Good going.
5 years. Five years.
Yeah.
I did that by contacting. Now, here's the other twist. I did it by contacting, doing research, and contacting a, I'm not going to name the company, but a consolidated company, you know, negotiates.
Right.
And I got stung by it because after I was in the third year, I paid $1,000 up front. When I was in the third year of paying off, taking this money, I was half of my paycheck for 5 years.
Oh, boy.
Half of my paycheck.
Wow.
And we lived on the other half. That
okay.
was fine.
Yep, yep.
But
that's
that company got sued or something, and the state of Rhode Island said that I couldn't deal with them. So I lost $1,000 from that credit company that I went to help me. And yet I went to another one. They told me I had to go to another one in another state. They wouldn't allow me to go to that one anymore. And I lost $1,000 in a transaction. But
are you sitting pretty now? You paid off 55 grand in credit.
What happened 2 years later is that the funding for my job went. It went. So I had a TIA, CREF, from the
retirement.
I was a university professor. I wasn't retired, but I had that money there. And so for that next year, a year ago, I had to pull money out to live on because my husband had no income and he didn't work. In fact, what happened was I was clean. Credit cards, I didn't owe anything on any credit cards.
Right.
Within 2 months of the donut hole, $4,000 had to go on my credit card, $4,500 in 1 day.
So after all that, the money for your job went away and you're back in the credit card trap.
I don't call it a trap because I have my own plans on how to go about doing it.
Yeah.
I just pull aside. We don't spend money on a whole lot of frivolous stuff, but we still live okay. I don't own a house.
Yeah.
I don't own any. I only own a used car. I just live very basic because I'm not a materialistic person, and I don't have three children to support anymore by myself the women we're talking about. But here I am again. The reason is he needed a lot of meds, and we don't qualify for any help in meds. Because I have TIA CREF.
And so up goes that cost, and after all of your hard work, out goes that balance that you managed to grab. Joyce, thank you for that. I mean, Kristen, you're listening, and you've watched a lot of people grapple with these things. After that heroic effort to pay down $55,000 in credit card debt, boom, a couple things happen, and Joyce is back in the, back in the gun sights.
Yeah, and I think that's, increasingly becoming a hallmark of American life, at least for those who, are not upper income, is that, one little derailment, or in a case of a job loss, a big derailment, and, the best laid of plans can go awry. There's just not a lot of room for error, whether, that error comes on the part is a decision someone makes for themselves or something that happens to them. Financial lives of many Americans are just very precarious.
I mean, Michelle, people look at this and they draw some big conclusions. Andrew writes to us on Facebook here. He says, middle-class debt is the other side of the widening inequality coin. Rather than owning their fair share of productivity, the middle class has to borrow to keep up. Andrew writes, in exchange for a life of indentured servitude. I don't know. I'm descended from actual indentured servants, but people can feel that way, Michelle.
Well, I mean, sure, because when you're having to use credit to cover basic living expenses. That is a very difficult place to get out of, and you start to have the sense of futility that you only work to repay debt and that you really aren't making any progress. I know some of the people that we've talked to who have dipped into the retirement savings to cover expenses, they seem to have almost done it because there was this sense of futility. Their retirement savings weren't anywhere near what they needed to be for them to retire at 65 or even 70. And so there's this feeling of, you know, what's the difference? I might as well go ahead and use this today, and then I'll just have to figure out the next problem down the road.
So the very circumstances that get you in trouble can create a kind of despair that you sort of throw it up in the air and say, okay, whatever, here we go?
Yeah, it certainly can. And I know even when you're in the midst of a repayment plan, it can be a very tough road to hoe. It can be hard to stick with that and to make that successful because it does take a long period of time to repay debt. And life happens in the intervening years. And so, but I also want to commend the caller who was just talking because it can be done. I mean, we have worked with clients who have repaid $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, even $100,000 of credit card debt. It can be done, but it is no doubt very difficult. And like Kristen was saying, so many people live so close to the edge, and the reality is they just don't have adequate savings that when you hit a bump in the road, it can be really easy to get derailed.
Kristen, you know, here's a listener who says, wait a minute, debt is not a trap, it's a choice. Kristen?
Well, you know, I think when you're talking about a decision of whether or not to keep the heat running, the lights on, I'm not sure that's really a choice. Sure, you know, we can argue a bit about whether or not somebody having a cell phone is a choice, although increasingly, you need a cell phone if your employer wants to call you and tell you to come in to work that day. You need some sort of
phone. Maybe your only phone.
Maybe your only. In fact, most of the folks I deal with gave up landlines long ago.
Yep.
And, you know, so I guess I just don't see people being frivolous about using too much electricity. I suppose you can, but when I've been in people's homes in the winter, it's pretty cool. No one's cranking the heat up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially when you've got kids, there's a certain basic level of living that has to go on in the home.
Maybe people, this sounds cruel, but maybe that's more drastic action they need to take before they get to that. Like, I don't know, move back in with the parents or move into a shared home. It sounds like Dickens. Is there not room in the poorhouse? But maybe it's people's expectations of maintaining a certain American lifestyle that get them in trouble, Michelle.
Well, Tom, what I would say is that having limited means makes you incredibly resourceful.
Yep.
And when you look at the debt that people have accrued, I mean, some people are carrying debt levels that made a lot of sense for them 3, 5, 7 years ago, but they may have had a different employment picture. I really think the fact that many people are working today in jobs that are not paying as well as they paid several years ago, I think that's a big part of the debt problem that we're seeing today. They can't carry the level of debt that they could previously, and it just hasn't fundamentally been resolved in many times in their housing picture is where part of that problem is. But, you know, I think people are resourceful and they are making a lot of decisions. I mean, they are cutting out the non-essentials. You know, this isn't a problem of people continuing to use their charge card at Neiman Marcus. I think it goes much deeper than that.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about tough times and Americans in debt, the trap that is grabbing people, especially people on the edge. You may hear that great sucking sound of household debt around you when it's borrow or lose the house, borrow to pay the bills. What do you do? Michelle Jones joins us from Atlanta. She's Senior Vice President of Counseling at the nonprofit financial counseling service Credibility. Kristen Seafelt is with us from the University of Michigan, sociologist there in Ann Arbor, Michigan today. Lots of interesting feedback, Michelle and Kristen. I mean, Alicia writes to us on Facebook, student loans, medical bills, credit card bills, and I'm only 20. She writes, middle class, I'll see you in my dreams. Sarah says it's daunting to even consider saving for retirement when I have $40,000 of student debt and a job that just gets us by. CD in San Francisco, writes, protesting the notion that it's just bad budgeting, says it is low wages and not having enough income to save for emergencies that's getting millions of Americans into trouble. And Charlene writes there, I couldn't agree with you more. Americans have tightened their belts and made lifestyle adjustments. It's still not enough with the ever-increasing cost of living and decreasing wages. Let's hear directly from our listeners. Matthew in Omaha, Nebraska. You're on the air, Matthew. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Earlier you asked, are people borrowing from their 401ks in place of other debt options, such as credit card debt, right?
Yeah.
In my case, that is precisely what I did. I did take out a big loan from my 401k recently because my wife got a new job and we moved and we bought a home. And the price was very good on this home, but in order to make an adequate down payment, because the banks no longer wanted to give us a good mortgage with only 5% down, so they wanted more money than that, I didn't happen to have it. So what are my other options? Well, I could maybe go to family, loss of jobs around the family means nobody can loan you any money anymore.
Right.
I could try to get a personal loan from the banks, but those were at ridiculously high interest rates, and they wanted blood for the cost of the personal loan. Or you could go to somewhere like a payday loan store. Well, that's ridiculous. There's just no way I can do that either.
Sure.
So I am actually using my 401k as an alternative financial product because the banks offer me no other options. And my frustration is that the Federal Reserve has given billions of dollars to the banks for exactly the purpose of loaning it out for businesses, for homes, for other reasons. I'm an excellent credit risk with a very high credit score. I don't have a lot of credit card debt. I don't have a great deal of school debt.
Yeah.
But I can't move along in this economy because the banks are so stingy. They only want to loan me the money if I already have the money to begin with. Well, I don't need that. If I've already got the money to begin with, then I don't need your loan.
So you created your personal financial product right out of your own 401k. Matthew, stand by. Michelle Jones, what are you thinking as you hear this story of how Matthew's figured out his way forward?
Well, I don't think it's uncommon, or I can see absolutely from his perspective unreasonable. I mean, that makes perfect sense. And you know, when we look at 401k usage, you really want that to be your last or your only resort that you have available. You know, we do, not knowing his personal situation in detail, I wouldn't hazard to go much farther than that. But, you know, I do know that we have seen people make different housing decisions. We've had people move away from ownership recently. We've had more people move into rental situations precisely because they either couldn't get the loan that they wanted to qualify for, or they just didn't feel that their income was stable enough and they didn't want to take that risk of homeownership going forward after what they had suffered the past few years.
I mean, for him, he's looked around. It sounds like he's really scoured the horizon, and this seems to be the most reasonable alternative. Though it seems unfortunate that this is the most reasonable alternative because, I don't know, in Matthew's case, but for a lot of people, Michelle, that 401k may be almost the only thing beyond Social Security that they've got when they finally get to retirement age.
Right, and you can see how it almost seems unreasonable to tell people, don't access the only bucket of savings you have. I mean, when that's in effect what people are being told when they're saying, don't use your 401k. But, you know, I also have to speak with my credit counselor hat on and say it is so incredibly important to save for retirement because you're going to be facing the exact same difficulties 10, 20, 30 years down the road when you don't have the same earning potential that you do today.
Matthew, you've tapped it. So what about your retirement? Are you counting on this house you and your wife are buying to appreciate?
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, I sure hope so, yes. But we are, of course, paying back that loan. You know, now I get a slightly smaller paycheck every month because I'm slowly paying that loan back. And I'm paying myself back, 4.25% interest or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I realize I'm losing the earnings potential of that money in the short run.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, over the last 6 months, it hasn't really earned all that much anyway in the rest of my account. So I see this as a best option. My complaint is just that it feels like the financial markets do not offer those of us who are good credit risks opportunities to keep sort of moving in this economy. They've just grown too stingy.
Yeah, we hear that loud and clear, and they definitely have become a lot tighter. I mean, we know things were too loose, but I don't know if we've got the right balance now. Matthew in Omaha, thanks for that call. Alfred in Winthrop, Massachusetts. Alfred, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi.
My situation's a little different. I'm not really in debt, although I probably will be next month. I've never borrowed, never had a mortgage, paid for my car in cash, and thus with the banking industry, I have no credit history, so my credit card score is N/A. Basically non-applicable because okay. I have no history because
yeah.
I've never borrowed.
Yeah.
I always cash and carry. Now, the problem that I'm really upset about, besides, you know, the economy being bad, which was caused by the banks, you know, kind of running.
We do remember, yeah.
And, but I'm looking, you know, nowadays, you know, to apply for a job, it's really not face-to-face anymore. It's more you got to apply online and all this. And I learned, also I was trying to just get a better deal on my electric supplier. And, you know, I signed up, applied for it, and then a few days later I got a letter from them saying I was denied the opportunity to come on their service because of a credit card score. You needed 525.
And you didn't have one at all because you didn't have a credit card?
I've never borrowed. Why isn't my credit score 850? If I've never borrowed or, you know, put the country in debt.
And that's just to get a better deal on your electricity. I don't know. What if you went out to find a new job? Would that be a factor there,
saying.
Too?
That's what I'm saying. Even these credit card, you know, like credit card score check services to check your, you know, those three credit bureaus.
Yeah.
They even advertise that it's good for your, you know, job, trying to get a job application. So I'm assuming that even if I'm applying for a job application, I could be denied because I don't have a credit card score.
Albert, you're that rare American cash and carry. You know, good on you for that. But you are also just smart looking at this picture. I mean, Kristen, you're listening there in Ann Arbor. Is it true that employers look at credit scores when it comes to getting hiring people? And what about the people you've followed? Do they, if they've had to borrow to get by, are they then trapped in part by that when it comes time to look for a job?
I think I'm starting to see that now. A couple people have told me that although they're not sure, they think that possibly they were turned down for a job because of their bad credit. And, you know, these folks are watching their credit reports religiously, in large part to keep track of what's showing up on there for fear that something that they didn't borrow erroneously shows up on their report, or something that they believe they've paid off does, because you know they know just how important it is. One woman believed that she was denied an apartment in a suburb because of her credit score as well. So you know this seems to be a practice you know that is becoming more widespread, and I. Short of some regulation at the federal level, these sorts of records are very easy for employers and landlords to access.
Do we have, I guess, if this sort of picture of need that's being presented is accurate, Kristen, it may be that people at lower income are going to be the ones most in need of using that credit, loans, debt, credit cards. So I wonder, is that where our national credit card debt, you know, sort of the percentage per capita relative to income is concentrated? Do you know?
I don't know. People who are lower income, you know, do have lower levels of credit card debt, although in part because, you know, many people, even though the credit card industry, you know, sort of opened up the floodgates a number of years and sent out applications for mm-hmm. cards to people they never would have in the many years ago, you know, there are many low-income people who don't have credit card debt. They have debt that derives from other sources. But when you have so – your resources are so limited, you know, having had a credit card where your limit was only $300 and you maxed it out, but then you have interest rates that are extraordinarily high, you know, that debt can accumulate pretty darn quickly.
But you describe people using this, you know, to keep the lights on, to keep from being mm-hmm. evicted, to keep the kids from going hungry. You can see why, if those are the options, you can see why people go there.
Absolutely. You know, it's really not even a choice for many women. You know, a phrase I hear repeatedly is, well, what else am I going to do? And they'll, you know, try to make that case with a debt collector that might call you and say, well, what do you want me to do? I don't have any more money. You know, this is what I make. That's all there is. You know, I need to keep, you know, a roof over my head and keep my kids warm.
Michelle, how do you look at this? Do you see a personal problem in these cases, these many cases, or do you see a systemic problem, or both?
Well, you know, I think that really, of course, managing your credit is vital, and it is important, you know, to speak to the earlier caller's point about having a credit score. I mean, that is used by so many people these days. I mean, it's used when you go to get a job, when you're trying to get car insurance, when you want to rent an apartment. Those are just some examples of when people are going to look at your credit report. And it is important to manage your credit, but you also have to manage your day-to-day life. And, you know, it's finding what's the right balance between those two for me. And sometimes people need to make decisions in their day-to-day life that may not necessarily positively impact their credit, but that's what they're doing precisely, as you said, to put food on the table for their children, to keep their lights on.
Is it possible that there's a standard of living here that Americans are struggling to sustain using credit, using debt, that this country just can't afford anymore, Michelle?
You know, I don't know, Tom. I mean, I have thought about that. And, you know, we've all heard the stories of, you know, do you continue to, let's say, put your kids in private school, or, you know, some of those more things that you would see as extravagances. But I really believe from the people that we've seen over the past few years, people have really tightened their belt. They have really cut back. And, you know, one of the things that I keep looking for, too, is, you know, we're coming out of this great recession, and I don't want everyone to make decisions based purely on a recession mentality. I mean, recessions aren't permanent. Mm-hmm. So you do still need to plan for a future. And I still hold out hope that we are ultimately going to have a future that's brighter than today.
That would go a long way toward helping people get out of these traps. Scott in Jamestown, New York. Scott, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, you know, it's not just one thing that's killing us. Like, my wife and I both lost our job when the economy crashed. We had like $8,000 in credit card debt, non-hinky mortgage, modest house. Well, now it's like, wife got rehired, same job, less money. Then we ended up making $20 a month, too much to get food stamps. So that $20, they took away $200 in food stamps. Then, because of the same reason, lost Medicaid. Now, I've had cancer and a few other operations. My daughter, we have to go to Shriners for her treatment, but, like, the braces and stuff, they're not free.
Yep.
And the co-pays go up. So that's $200 more a month for insurance for me and my wife. My daughter is covered for some stuff under the chips.
Yep.
We can't get a refi in our house because we've paid too much off, and we're told by Bank of America, you're not profitable for us. But they gave friends of ours who missed payments and got a house they shouldn't, oh, here, we'll forgive so much, refi, blah, blah, blah.
So it's not one thing. It sounds like it's a whole lot of things, Scott, biting away.
It's just every time. It's not even one step forward and two steps back. It's just, you know, just watching the drain, getting closer.
Kristen Seafelt, Scott, good luck with that. Good luck, my friends. Kristen, you must hear that a lot. I mean, it doesn't sound like, you know, living large or overspending. It's just you got to eat, you got to take care of your medical bills, you got to do this, you got to do that, and pretty soon Scott feels like his family's circling the drain.
No, absolutely. You know, I think part of what we face, a challenge we face in this country is, you know, along with growing, you know, income inequality, we have, you know, people living apart from each other. So people who are have had the ability to stay afloat, especially during these tough times, don't necessarily know what's going on in communities where that's not so much the case. So the people I know live in very cramped quarters with very little furniture, for example. Sometimes because they've sold off possessions, you know, as a way to generate cash. And, you know, so now there's two chairs for five people to sit on. So, yes, it's...
Yeah. That hardly sounds like extravagance, sharing
a chair. It really is not extravagant whatsoever.
We're trying to keep it real here, and you hear just how real those stories get. Michelle, don't know, what's your big advice to people who feel like, you know, they can see the drain, they don't want to go down it, they don't want to go into debt either? What's the starting point?
Sure. Well, I think one of the starting points is to go back to the top of your hour of your show. You know, one of the things that people do need to do is get a good idea of what their spending is. Regardless of the amount of resources you have available, it's important that you know what your priorities are and what your commitments are, and that you actually list those out for yourself. I can't tell you how many times we do a counseling session, someone will tell us that it's the first time they've done a budget, or they can't bear to add up all of their bills because they know they can't pay them all, and it's just too overwhelming to look at it. But it is important to list out what are the expenses that you need to cover every month, and to fully identify what are all the resources available to you. That's the first step in creating a plan. And then I would look at, what do you think your opportunities are within the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months? And are there decisions you need to make for the short term that may be a little different than from the long term?
Well, we hear Americans doing the math at a lot of different levels in this hour. Yes, look at that budget. Yes, look at our whole economy. People paying close attention and trying to keep it all working. You two are real helpful to people in that. I can hear that. I appreciate your being with us today. Michelle Jones in Atlanta with Credibility. Thank you so much for joining us, Michelle.
Thank you.
And Kristen Seifelt at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Thank you, Kristen, for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Be with us tomorrow. We'll look at gun policy and politics on the other side of the president's big gun speech and push today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.